been an exciting morning for us because we were just informed that we won the 2008 Davies Award for a public health system. And some of you will see part of this presentation again during lunch. And I also want to acknowledge that this could not have been possible without total IT support and a good coordination between public health and IT. And our program manager, Eileen Troutman, is here, and I really want to thank her too. One of the main objectives of my presentation is to describe how important it is to integrate your workflow processes in designing a system, because it is extremely critical to provide functionalities that streamline the work processes of an already overburdened public health workforce. And we keep hearing the term, you've got to learn to do more with less, and one of the less that we have is like cutbacks in funding for public health staff. Give you a little background about New Jersey. We have a population of about 8.5 million, 21 counties, 566 municipalities, which are serviced by 114 local health departments. One of the things I often come across is when people talk of New Jersey, they often compare it to like large metropolitan areas like New York City and Chicago and LA. What they don't realize is that we have a very complex political system, which really is different from the norm that you're used to. Our 114 local health departments are totally free, our 566 municipalities are totally free to contract with different local health departments. So for 2 years, you might be, you know, being serviced by one health department, then the next 2 years, you can have a contract with someone else. It does not follow any kind of nested geographies. It's not like three, continuous geographic municipalities get together and form a local health department. No, it could be three different municipalities which don't even have common boundaries and are from three different counties get together and form a local health department. So while designing a system, we've got to put in so much flexibility that these same users can, you know, log in with different privileges with the same user account and get to their cases. Plus, given that we have 114 health departments, they don't have enough public health staff. So one public health nurse could be spending 2 days in one health department and 3 days in another one during the week. So it has to be a very flexible system to accommodate this. Overview of our system. We went with, it was 2001 that we developed our first generation web-enabled FIN compliant system. But that was a case-centric system. So in January 2006, we moved to a patient-centric system. Developing the first system was it was a good learning experience because we got a lot of good user buy-in. That was the system that people trained on using. And then when we developed our patient-centric system, it was totally based on user feedback. And we went till January 8th, they used the old system, and January 9th morning, they started using the new system, which was totally redesigned and different. We did all the trainings ahead of time in the November-December timeframe. And the first day that we went live, we had almost 600 users logging in different times of the day and start entering cases. It is a very well-integrated system. All our ELR is integrated into case management. So when you enter into a case, everything is organized in different tabs and you can get to your ELR right there and then. You don't have to log into a different system, or it's a very seamless process. We have extensive fields for case and outbreak management. We have a pretty good contact tracing element at this point. We have a lot of integrated AVR tools. We have two separate modules for aggregate reporting of ILI and antimicrobial resistance. The antimicrobial resistance is going into production next week. And the greatest advantage of our system is that we are not dependent on IT for most of our functioning. It's unless we have to get some code change or add modifications that we go to them. You can add new diseases, risk factors, signs, symptoms, whatever you have. through administrative screens that the program area has control over. We have over 1,200 users representing the State Department of Health, the local health departments, and the county health departments, and we have something else called the LINCS agencies, which are local information network groups. And we have hospitals and commercial labs. And you have different kind of staff with different user privileges from each of these organizations. We have, going into effect September 2008, also mandated electronic lab reporting from all the clinical labs. So we are hoping that all our 74 acute care hospitals and all the commercial labs would report to us electronically. They can do it either by manually typing it into this web-based system or sending us ELRs. And since 2001, we have been getting very regular ELRs from LabCorp, which has been absolutely fabulous. The tools that we have are tables, lists, maps, charts, and these can be utilized in at least these four broad functional areas that we look at. I'll be talking about each of these as we move on. We have, this is a screenshot of some of the reports that are available in the system. There are like over 175 different reports that are available, and this is where we have really tried to get a lot of user feedback and design reports which specifically help people streamline their work processes. And within each of these report types, there are multiple options in how you want to view it, whether you want to see it in tables or in charts, and whether at what level you want it. You can select different kinds of case statuses and report statuses and dates and what have you. The main purpose of any disease reporting system is definitely case management and how you can, you know, address quick public health response based on the information that you have. In order to do that, we have different lists. We have worked in the workflow. We have two kinds of statuses in our case management. One is your general case status, which is, you know, confirmed, probable, possible, report under investigation. And we have something that's called report status, which basically defines your workflow. So when a new case is created or reported through ELR, it shows up as a pending case and a report under investigation. And pending cases, again, based on your privileges in your jurisdiction, when you log into CDRSS for the first time, your pending cases, that's the screen you see, a list of your pending cases. We got a lot of feedback from users that after pending, it becomes, goes to LHD open. In some areas, it's just LHD review. And finally, the local health departments have to give it a status once their investigation is complete. They give it a status of LHD closed, and that's a signal to DHSS, the Department of State Department of Health, that now it's ready for them to review it. And the final blessing, so to say, that the case gets is a DHSS approved status, which means it's now the case investigation is complete. Once we have the DHSS approved status, local health departments can see the case, they can go into it, but they can't edit it without contacting the disease primary. So this way we really keep a good control over what's going, what information is going to CDC and at what level. And through this year, we definitely have a, you know, iterative process where they get a new case investigation or a report, and if it's not automatically generated through ELR and added to the case, then they contact the state and it's opened up for them. A disclaimer that all data displayed are fake. This is from our training site and do not reflect actual users or cases. This is the opening screen of CDRSS, and if you see, we have the pending screen, that's the highlighted tab. These are the cases now based on your jurisdiction and your privileges. As a DHSS user, I'll get to see everything, but if I was a local health department, I would see my 25 or 30 cases that are in my jurisdiction. The first release of our application just had the pending cases tab, but through the years, we got feedback from local health departments that they would like to see the reopen tab, which are cases which might get reopened due to a new electronic lab report or the state suddenly, you know, we've investigated and we feel, no, the investigation is not complete, we need additional information from the local health department, we change the status back to reopen, so they have a tab for just seeing, viewing all their reopened cases. And then there is the LH, I can't get this mouse to work. How do I get back? Okay. And then the LHD open is to show their work process, you know, that it's open, that's a case they're currently working on. The next type of the functional area that we have is resource management, and this is where the rubber meets the road, because you can have a really good system, it can have very good case reporting, but if you don't have staff to really enter information or do anything with those reports, then, you know, what's the use of that system? And we have designed, these were user reports which are based on feedback from health officers and other people. I mean, how can you check usage? How can you see whether, you know, your staff is overworked or is someone not completing their work on time? How many days does it take at an average to do some case investigation? Because there are some diseases which require a very lengthy investigation process, and their numbers might be really low. For example, Legionella and all, it takes really long to get the complete investigation. And then you could have your freeholders or someone saying, hey, you had just three cases, why are you saying that your public, you need additional time, you know, overtime for your public health nurse? Because they don't realize that it could take a lot of time to complete this. So you can run reports and show them that, you know, it actually took us 28 days to run this, to complete this investigation. There are very good audit trails for case management. You run a report for case activity, you put in your case ID number, it will give you a complete audit trail of who are the people who worked on this case with a hyperlink to their email, so you can click there. It generates an email with the case ID in the subject line, and all you have to do is say, you know, I need this further information. So these are things which have really helped people communicate in a fast manner and streamline their work process, because we have local health departments who, while they're in a case, they send an email to someone at the state and say, did you hear anything extra about it? And while they're still investigating, you know, they get that information back. We also have reports which show whether the cases were created manually or through ELR, and then how much time was spent in updating that information. This is just a screenshot of showing you that even within one report type, they have several options of, you know, what else you can do, what are the criteria you can select for generating these reports. Then we come to a third but really important area, you know, for grants, funding, and presentations. And the reality of public health is that we have to spend considerable time in, you know, trying to get funds and all. And even with the local health departments, they often do not have staff for doing data analysis, creating a pretty picture, putting graphs in, or running summary stats. Everything is available at the click of your mouse. And you can generate really nice reports that you can directly add into your, you know, grants. You can generate emails because, you know, one case of West Nile can create a lot of, you know, news for your mayor, but, you know, you are doing 300 cases of Lyme disease and hepatitis C. No, that's not news, but, you know, you can every week just generate a quick summary and email it to the powers that be, and you're in their mind, and it's not taken additional time on your, you know, it's just a mouse click away. We also, use reports for compliance issues and for generating, you know, maps and stuff. This is a quick screenshot of, you know, how the reports look. They are in a PDF format. You can export them into other formats as well. And email them directly from here. It comes with standard disclaimers, and they're really easy to interpret, and that saves a lot of time. This is another example of a report. You can, you know, it has graphs. It's a pretty nice looking report, which if you had to really do it, you might have to learn Excel skills and things, which often people, sometimes in the local health departments, it's difficult to find. This is a report which we can generate, which is the user group usage report, but this could also be turned around and used for compliance issues, where you see I have two examples where one of the hospitals, we realized they were not sending us any, they were not creating cases in their system. And all they were mailing these out to the local health departments who were then entering it into CDRSS, and this was a problem because they could have entered it, their ICPs and their lab staff should have entered it right there, especially given that we trained six of their people. When we contacted them, we realized there was a turnover in staff and things were missing out. The second example, Hospital 4, they were sending out part of their test to another referral lab, and the referral lab was then mailing it out, and it wasn't coming back to us in the right manner. So this time round, we also included it in our regs that it's the responsibility of the original lab to enter that case, unless they designate the referral lab, but the ultimate responsibility is with the lab director who sent that specimen out to someone else. So these were things which got highlighted with running these reports, and we could modify our regs. This is an example of a map. You can customize it. You can enter your own local health department's name and everything, and then it generates a pretty nice PDF file that you can again include in your reports, presentations, etc. We have pretty good GIS capabilities, which I'll get to in a moment. Data analysis, almost all fields can be exported out for further analysis. You can select fields. There are over 1,500 discrete data fields that we have, and that really helps with analysis. Recently, there was an increase in false positive rates for hepatitis A virus, and CDC contacted all the states to see what was happening, and it was a matter of hours that our hepatitis A coordinator could generate these reports and show them that almost 41% of the false negative reports we were getting were from someone using a particular test kit. And it, a lot of other states, it took them several weeks to do that. So that was like a really one of the advantages of having this. We also have an archive database that the day that we do our final CDC transmission for the year, so like for 2007, we did it on, I think, 13th of May 2008, we keep a snapshot of the database as it was, and that's called our historical database. That is for people if they want to generate the same stats during the year so that they match the MMWR numbers. And that has proved to be really advantageous again because it helped local health departments to close out their cases in a timely manner because they realized that they might have worked on an additional 50 Lyme cases, which they wouldn't be getting credit for in the MMWR because, you know, they didn't do it in a timely manner. So this is a screenshot of some of the reports you can run. And this is export report, which again, you can either choose to select your own fields or there are some canned export reports, which you can then work on. So you go, you select your diseases, you select the dates you want it run into and your case statuses. Then it generates this screen where you can go in, open out all the tabs and just select the particular fields that you are interested in. You can also choose the fields for the lat long and then pull it into your GIS map software outside of. So these are about 1,500 fields or so that you can select. And one of the things I always tell people is never ever do the select all option because this, you can't use that ever. Then we come to the final stuff, that is use of GIS, which has been extremely critical in New Jersey's success. As I mentioned, we have all these varied unnested geographies in New Jersey, and each case as it's entered gets geocoded. If it doesn't find the exact match, you can manually zoom into a map and drop the point where you think that here's where the new subdivision has come up, and here local knowledge really helps. If you don't know what it is, say the case has come into the state, then we can use the county zip code or municipal centroid. And then it shows up in the right jurisdiction and someone will see it out there and enter the complete address. We also use GIS for case distribution and contact mapping, but to get back to the first point, why it's so critical in New Jersey, I have a very fascinating slide. So here you have 9 addresses. All of them have the same city, Princeton, and the same zip code, 08540. So you say, so what's the big deal? Send it to the Princeton Health Department. They say, no, wait a moment, let me just geocode them. You geocode them. Yeah, the city name still shows up as, the zip code name shows up as Princeton. And you see the distribution of the 9 cases. You say, wait a minute, let me just put on the municipal boundary file. And what do you see? The 9 cases fall into 9 different municipalities. Say, okay, let's send it to the county. They can take care of it and distribute it. No, it falls into 3 different counties. And they all have the same post office name, which is Princeton, because everyone wants to live in Princeton. So do I, so what can I say? And then when you really map it to the local health department, you have to report those 9 cases which had the same city and zip code to 8 different local health departments. And if we had our people at LabCorp trying to figure out where they need to send it, it would take them forever. And that's where, you know, ELR with them has been really good, because then it shows up where it should be and gets investigated in a timely manner. This is an example of how we use contact tracing. You can do up to 5 tiers. I've just done up to three tiers, and you can see where the index case was, and then, you know, if the case is related to another case is related to, and so this has been another thing which has been pretty useful. And what are the lessons learned? That good AVR tools are really essential towards building a dedicated user base. People have to view an application not as something which has been forced upon them by a regulatory authority. It has to be, what can the application give back to me? It's not a black hole that you want to design where there's a lot of data that resides, but it has to work into people's everyday lives. It has to streamline it, and it has to show them some improvement over the old known paper-based reporting. And that in effect creates a self-generating continuous improvement process, and you know, you keep improving on your system. I'd like to acknowledge a lot of people, our medical director and our CDRSS coordinator, who this year could not be here, and the CDRSS steering committee, which I really would like to go back and call the communities of practice, and all our local health department staff. It's my contact information. We do have our training site, and this is a user ID and password you can all use if you want to just go and play around and see that, you know, these weren't like generated maps. You can really see all of this information. Thank you.